Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We have a lot to get into off of a Titans win over the Chargers. It's about time. A long losing streak that was broken. So we'll get into that. We got Chris Sanders coming on, old Fish Eye Fool, Run TMC. And we also will have Jake Trotter from ESPN NFL Nation covering the Browns. We'll get some insight from him. David James over there making it happen.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you. So first things first, I think we do need to get into this Titans win. Obviously, it was a big win for them. The last time they won was November over the Packers. So it's a taste that they haven't gotten to experience in quite some time. And you definitely could tell a more laid-back environment in the locker room. But they also know that there's a big task at hand. The big thing for me just in watching this game is just like how dead it was. You look at that whole first quarter, David. I mean, Tannehill, he had a very bad game, right? A very bad quarter, rather. Mm-hmm. 11 passing yards. That was the second lowest he's had since he's been with the Titans in one quarter. But then the Chargers scored, and next thing you know, Tim Kelly dials up the perfect play. And it's a 70-yard gain, and that set everything up. This is what Ryan Tannehill was thinking when he got that play call. I'm sure he was excited. I would have been, too, knowing that that's an area that I excel.
Yeah, knew we were going to have a chance. Didn't know, obviously, what coverages they were going to play, if you're going to have a chance at the deep one or you know, have a chance at the cross, right? There's a limited number of options in that play, but a coverage really dictates where the ball can go in that play. So I wasn't sure exactly where the ball was going to go, and then I saw a good coverage pre-snap and were able to hit it to trail.
So that was Tannehill speaking on that. Notice how he said the way it benefits them when they move the play action, how it moves defenders and it gets them into spaces that they want to go. So that way where they want to go with the football is vacated and it allows for the completion. I think that's a really good point that he makes. And, you know, that throw was really good. I mean, Burks was able to, the way he was able to run that football down, I thought that was really good. And it's one of those things where it's the technique is there, whereas he's not running with his hands out. He's tucking and he's running. He's eyeing the ball. And I don't know if you guys realize, you know, at Nissan Stadium, the direction that he was looking, that sun, when it's coming down, like it will blind you. And to be able to track that football, I was impressed with that. And obviously Chris Moore did that later and he did a really good job of stacking that DB on that play. And he went and got the ball as well, went up and attacked it. And then you had Nick Westbrook-Ikhine catching a touchdown pass off of play action. So overall, Tannehill was 7-9, 168 yards, and one touchdown on play action. So make no mistake about it, that is where they excel the most. Another thing that stood out to me, though, just in looking back on the game, was the way they were able to find the balance. Now, they ran the ball a little bit more than passing, but their success on first down was significant. And it were only two runs where they had less than 4 yards on first down. So when you're able to stay ahead of the chains like that, you know, you're getting into second and six, second and two, like those favorable situations, you can open the playbook up a little bit more. So that was a good job by the Titans to be able to keep things in order there offensively. The use of Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears at the same time. I tell you what, David, when you look at Spears, you know, it goes back to something I said back in rookie minicamp when we first got to see him, the acceleration, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a Tesla, that quick 0-60 in 3 seconds. He does a really good job of hitting top speed. And there were a few times where, you know, you look at him and it's like, oh, that's bottled up. And he bounces it out and he gets a big gain. The other thing about Tajay Spears is his ability to break tackles. I don't think he went down one time on first contact.
Yeah, I couldn't even remember. To be
a guy, and James Lofton, watching the broadcast, he had compared him to Thurman Thomas. I thought that was a good comparison. You know, they're basically the same size, 5'10", 201 to 200. Spears is 1 pound heavier than Thurman Thomas was, but I really like that comparison. And you look at how, you know, running between the tackles, then the ability, like I said, to take that inside run and bounce it out when it's not there inside. I thought that was impressive. And that's something that we're going to continue to see. I thought Paul Kaharsky, he wrote a really nice piece about Tajay Spears possibly hurting Derrick Henry's Hall of Fame candidacy. And I understand what he's saying. He caught a lot of flack for it, but if you look at the post and you look at what has happened, I get it, because I don't know if there's going to be games where Henry's going to have 35 to 40 carries anymore, because they want to make sure that Spears gets the ball as well. And then you're also looking at the way things are shifting. They want to get away from that extra run heavy team that they've been in the past. Now, when we get to December, if they make the playoffs also, in those situations, you may see Derrick Henry, you know, carry the ball a lot more. But I think having Tajay Spears in the mix, it gives them something. And it's like a lot of people had an issue with them drafting him in the third round because he's a running back. I really encourage people to look at it differently. Don't look at him as a running back. Look at him as a weapon. And that's something that you look at Detroit with Jahmyr Gibbs. Obviously, they're not using him the way that a lot of us thought they would use him, you know, when they use a first-round pick on him. But that's another situation where you got a guy and he's just a weapon. He's not necessarily a running back. He's a weapon. We'll see that this week, right? You look at Whiteboard Wednesday. You got Elijah Moore for the Browns. Now, he's a guy that they've used in the backfield. They've used him, you know, motioned him into the backfield. They used him in the slot, all types of ways. And when you have those positionless players, you don't really designate them as a particular running back or receiver, et cetera. And that's what we'll see this week. That's what we're starting to see right now with Tajay Spears. So I definitely like that. Defensively, you know, this is an interesting situation just because Christian Fulton, he's back at practice. You know, he was not a full participant. I'm not going to push it that far, but he actually took part in individual period, which is something that we didn't see him do last week. So that's a good sign for that hamstring. You know, the best thing for that is just rest. And so him getting that rest and now this week being able to go at least during that individual period is it's a bump up for the Titans secondary. Trey Avery was the replacement last week. He got picked on. Now, I thought he had some good plays, though. You know, he came up and he tackled well. And it was interesting. If you watch, there was a third down early in the game where they went back to something that they did before to Trey Avery. And it was a quick pass to Mike Williams. And Williams was able to break the tackle and get another 15, 20 yards and put him in position to score a touchdown. Later in the game for Keenan Allen's touchdown, they did that again. And Allen was in the slot. And they pump faked to Williams on the outside. And Allen just kind of stuttered and then went into the wheel route, and it was an easy touchdown for them. He was wide open. So good layering of plays there for Kellen Moore. But when it mattered the most, this Titans defense, they were able to bear down and stop the passing game. And this is something with Justin Herbert's is interesting to me, because you see so many people ready to crown him. Hey, put him in the Hall of Fame. He's better than Josh Allen. He's better than Jalen Hurts, et cetera. They know better than compare him to Pat Mahomes, but still putting him up there. Once again, he had the ball in the fourth quarter, and he failed to win the game for the team. Three and out in overtime as well. So I think that Titans defense, they deserve some credit for that. This week coming up, though, it's going to be a test. It's a different test, though, right? Because now you have a guy in Watson that can extend plays and do those types of things. In fact, here's Kevin Byard on Deshaun Watson and, you know, some of the stresses that he puts on the defense.
Yeah, I mean, they want to take shots because obviously they have really good run games, so that's obviously going to force us to, you know, kind of load the box up. And he's going to try to take some shots deep down the field. So I think it's going to be a big key of us cleaning up a lot of those, you know, communication issues we may have last week and those big plays. because, like I said, if we don't stop the run, they're going to take those shots. And like you said, Deshaun Watson, even when he does scramble to try to extend those plays, he's looking to throw the ball. He will scramble, but he's looking to throw the ball downfield, and he has a really strong arm, so we're going to have to be really good on the back end.
And then for you guys, like as DBs, you love to come up and, you know, support against the run, but that play action, like how tough is it to balance those two things out?
Yeah, I think, especially with the team that we have this week, they're going to try to get downhill and run the ball. I think you're going to have to be really good as far as if you are deep. First and foremost, disguising, right, if you're in cover two, cover three, trying to just give them a different picture, but also really being able to read the offensive linemen. I think they have some keys a little bit as far as knowing when they're – because guys will pull sometimes and it forces you to run up and try to fit your run gap, but they will still flash your pass off that. So just watching the film and studying those guys, seeing if they're really getting down the field or they're just doubling and getting back. To make sure that we have some depth in our, you know, zone coverages or whatever we're doing. So forcing to check the ball down, just don't give those deep shots down.
So that was Kevin Byard on this, the secondary and what they have to do. Notice he said about disguising coverage. Now, if you go back, it was, I want to say 2020. The Texans were here. Yeah, it was 2020. The Texans were here at Nissan Stadium. And it was later in the game. They ran a wheel route with Duke Johnson. And if you go back and watch the play, they initially gave him a cover one look. And Watson just almost knew that, okay, Duke Johnson on the linebacker, I'm going to win there. Oh, snap, they rotated to cover two. Kenny Vaccaro dropped back into his deep half. Watson had it predetermined where he was going with the ball. He tried to hit Duke Johnson. Vaccaro picked it off. That's an example of the way that you disguise coverage, even on a veteran quarterback like Watson. You disguise coverage, give him one look pre-snap, a different one post-snap. So that's something that they did before. And I think they're going to have to continue to do that. The key this week is going to be frustrating Deshaun Watson. You got to get up there, mug the receivers, you know, cause more chatter at the line of scrimmage to disrupt that timing, make Watson run around. And obviously as a DB, you got a plaster, so they'll have to do that. Murphy Bunning and you know, Christian Fulton, if he's back, right? Elijah Molden, if they have him down in the box on the tight end or whatnot. And of course, Roger McCreary, who quietly is playing really well. He's become one of their probably outside of, you know, Byard in the secondary overall, but definitely among the corners, he's probably their most reliable one right now. He's playing outstanding football, coming up and tackling well and everything. But, you know, that's the main thing. And you go back to Monday night against the Steelers, Watson was clearly frustrated. How many times have you seen a quarterback get two face mask calls? And then you had the interaction with the ref, whatever you want to call it. You had that as well. So definitely some issues there. The Steelers were able to frustrate him. Obviously, Arden Key, Harold Landry, Denico Autry, these are really good pass rushers. They're not the same as Alex Highsmith and T.J. Watt, so you may not get that same level of pressure, and you may not have David Njoku, you know, helping as much. But if they're able to, you know, require that, it's going to take Njoku out of the passing game, and that could also frustrate Watson, not having your tight end. And Harrison Bryant, he that drop he had was just disgraceful. He had a bad game as well, so I'm sure that factored into the frustration also. So I think, you know, overall, this Titans defense has a good chance to obviously extend their excellence against the run. Jerome Ford is a good back, though. Don't get it twisted, and Kareem Hunt's in the mix, but I'm really curious how they're going to use Elijah Moore. So those are some of the things to keep in mind. I mean, the Titans are 1-1. They're right there neck and neck with the Jaguars. And it was interesting in week two, you actually saw the difference in the strength of schedule, right? The Titans were playing the Chargers. They beat them. The Jaguars were playing the Chiefs, and they got beat. So there's definitely something to that, right? When you look at the schedule, you know, playing against the second-place team as opposed to the first-place team. But this thing still has to continue to play out. The Titans have a lot of things that they have to get taken care of offensively, the offensive line, right? They're going to be tested this week. You know, you look at Dalvin Tomlinson, you look at Za'Darius Smith, and obviously Myles Garrett. You know, Mike Vrabel said there's not a lot of guys walking the planet Earth like Myles Garrett. And you saw what he's done, you know, from time to time. So that's going to be a good test for Andre Dillard
for Chris Hubbard, who Mike Vrabel said has played pretty well, you know, played winning football. But don't be surprised, Trevon Wesco. One thing he has to do is avoid getting another false start. It's something he's gotten in both games, but he is going to be someone that they're going to have, you know, wherever Myles Garrett is when he lines up on the outside, they're going to need to have him there as well to you know, to chip and help out there. And that play action, remember, play action, max protection that allows you to get the ball down the field. So those are some of the things to watch. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. Be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
For you, fresh, fresh, fresh. Get those drinks. Now here we go. Music fades. The lights dim. Now, coming to you live from Madison Square Garden, starting as shooting guard for your New York Knicks, number 6, Trent Tucker.
And now, one of the greatest wide receivers for the Green Bay Packers, Donald Driver.
Hey, you could at least call me Antonio Freeman.
No. Hey, Donald Driver was a beast, man.
He was.
He ran mad all the time.
I'm light skinned, man. Hey, you know, as a matter of fact, back in Kyle, you ever noticed all the players I picked for you are dark skinned? You know, because we're going to make it relate.
What's cracking, like, man? Titans had a great man. What you think, boss, man?
Hey, yeah, definitely a big win. Redemption for Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
I want to get into something with you because one of the things is you go back to your days, right? Very productive on play action passing. So you look at Treylon Burks, the 70-yard catch, Chris Moore, the 49-yard catch. Just take me through that process. You know, when you're in the huddle, you hear the play action call, what are the things that you're looking for? What made it successful for you?
You know, the thing about it is it goes back to studying film. And you heard what Ryan Tannehill and some of the guys said. He said we watched film and we knew what coverage they were going to be in. And I'm going to give you a perfect example about wide receiver and quarterback being on the same page and also recognizing the coverage. I remember in 1999 we were playing the Atlanta Falcons. We were studying film the week before. And they were playing like a cover three, and I'm on the outside. And they said this. They said if the safety scrolls down and he blitzes, with every route that you run, you got to break it off and do a side adjust. When we say side adjust, you break off your route and you run a slant, so you got to get the ball out quick. So we got in our formation, and then we get out there, and the safety started to creep up. And once he creeped up, me and the quarterback looked at each other like, aha. It goes back to when we study film. And right when that safety blitz, I run a slant. I catch the pass. 46-yard touchdown. So to make your point is, it's the same thing with Ryan Tannehill and Treylon Burks. They study film together. They got in that formation. They got in the one-on-one coverage. They saw that, and they threw the ball deep, almost a touchdown to Treylon Burks.
And you look at the stats from that game, just specifically honing in on play action. 7-9,
wow.
168 yards, one touchdown. Now, mind you, he had 246 overall.
Yeah.
It's not just that game, though, because you could go back all the way to 2019. Tannehill has always been really good at play action, throwing bombs to Khalif Raymond, the strike route to A.J. Brown. Corey Davis as well. Yeah, the touchdown against the Lions. Mm-hmm. What is it that makes those two so good? Not even those two, just Tannehill and just the offense itself so good on play action.
Oh, man, you know, it starts with the running game. It starts with the running game. If there was no running game, those linebackers are not going to cheat up. And that's what you want to happen is when you put the ball out, those linebackers got to respect that Derrick Henry's getting the ball. Let me give you a perfect example. Peyton Manning. Why was Peyton Manning so good? Why was Peyton Manning so great at what he does? It's because what he did, the little things. He showed you the ball like he's giving it to the running back, and he pulls it. What happens? Those linebackers cheat up, and you throw the play action behind them. That's why it works. If the Titans didn't have a running game and it was just average, those linebackers wouldn't cheat up, and they would just play the play action. So it starts with the running game.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
Let's get into something else with the offense, right? Because you look at Tajay Spears, Henry, they're both on the field saying so much.
Oh my God.
Haven't really seen that before. What do you make of the way they're using those two together?
I mean, it's scary. They complement each other. And I know this is a little different. I know they're trying to make it like Lindale White and Chris Johnson. We got one fast guy, one that's a bruiser. But these guys are a little different. I mean, you're talking about two home run hitters. You got two guys, as in Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears, guys that can take it the distance, guys that are physical runners. Even though Tajay Spears is not big as Henry, he still plays big and he runs through people's lips. So when you have two guys in the backfield like that, then you can use guys in different situations. And the good thing about it is both of these guys on the field, when you go like a 20 personnel that's two back, zero tight ends, and three wide receivers, each guy can get the ball. You can run inside zone. You can run anything with these guys because both of these guys are on the field.
When you look at this Browns defense shifting to this game here, what are some of the things that stand out? I mean, you look at the secondary, right? You know, they got some dogs back there.
They
Greg
do.
Newsom,
they do.
Denzel Ward, one of the top corners. Grant Delpit is playing really well. And then, you know, they brought over Juan Thornhill, who brings that championship pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, this is a physical defense now. I mean, look at the guys they got up front. They got Garrett, they got Thompson, they got Ellis. They got guys that are physical at the point of attack. And then you look at the back end, you got Ward and Newsom. Those guys that are kind of, I'm not saying they're all the way shut down corners, but they're close to being shut down corners. So, you know, I know the Titans took some shots last week against the Los Angeles Chargers and, you know, kind of at the line of scrimmage were physical against the Los Angeles Chargers. But now you got the Cleveland Browns. And even though they lost a tough game to the Pittsburgh on Monday night, their defense kept them in the game. I mean, they were swarming the quarterback. They were swarming the receivers. If you look at that game, there was only a couple of big plays in that game, you know, that the Pittsburgh Steelers made. So when you have a defense like that, that's nasty up front, that's nasty in the back end, this is a defense that you got to reckon with.
So let's go back to when you were playing, you're facing the Ravens defense. Now, granted, I'm not saying this Browns defense is the Ravens defense, but – when you're going against a strong defense like that, how did you guys approach it? Did you say, like, I don't care what you do, we run the football and that's what we're going to do, or did you kind of mix in other things?
We had that mentality, that what you just said, but also we had to be patient. You know, when I say patient, that when you're getting 4 yards, if you're getting 4 yards a pop, that's a win. Well, one thing we wanted to do with – what's that?
No, I said right.
Yeah. And what we want to do is, you know, when you have that, when you got 4 yards a pop, that's a win. And when you're going against a Ravens defense like that, a Pittsburgh Steelers were really good, Cleveland Browns were good at that year. When you have a stingy defense, you just have to be patient. You can't say, okay, well, if we punt, then it's a bad thing. The key to the whole thing is stay patient, stay ready. Say, you know what, it's going to pop at any minute. Because when we went against the Ravens, let me tell you something. You got Ray Lewis and, you know, all those big-name players, that sometimes the line wasn't moving. But you keep chopping wood, keep chopping wood, keep chopping wood, keep chopping wood until that tree falls. And that's exactly what happened when we went against the Ravens.
So when you look at overall Tim Kelly over the first couple games and into this one, how has he done the first couple games, and what are you expecting this week against the Browns?
I think he's doing a pretty good job. And the reason why I think he's doing a good job, because if you look at the offense, it's not predictable. You know, everybody knows that they're going to run the play action. They know that Derrick Henry's going to get the ball, but sometimes they don't know when. And I think that's the key. If you don't know when a team is doing something and you keep them on balance, I mean, I think that's a really cool deal. And then another thing, too, is TD, is the one thing I love about him is he's paying attention to details. He understands that if I get in this formation, the defense is giving me this, and I'm going to take what the defense gives me. Prime example, we talk about the situation with Treylon Burks when he caught that 76-yarder. He understood that if I get in this formation, then I'm going to get this results. So that's what I love with Tim Kelly doing. He's paying attention to details, and he's taking what the defense is giving him.
Well, what about the impact that DeAndre Hopkins has had? You look at that catch he had at the end. I mean, like, he's not – giving you 10 for 100 or anything like that. But look at that catch at the end to put them in position to kick the field goal. How do you feel his impact has been?
I mean, it's been pretty good. I know we want to see more stuff out of the field, but he's not that guy right now. But I think with DeAndre Hopkins, he's making right plays at the right time. And I think that's a good deal by him. And the one thing I love about him, TD, right now, everybody understands that they want to get the ball. They want to catch those 10 passes. They want to catch 11, 13, whatever. But what he's doing now, he's being an unselfish person, and he's understanding his role. He understands that, okay, I may not stretch the field and go downfield. We got Burks to do that. But when it comes to clutch time, when it's fourth quarter, and you need that dig route to come over, or you need that slant to come open, or you need that hitch or that choice route, then I'm going to be reliable to make those plays. And that's why I think that he may not have the numbers yet, but he still contributes to a team that's doing pretty good.
Just to real quick flip it to the other side, the defense, what did you like or dislike against the Chargers? I know Trey Avery, they were picking on him.
Oh, they were picking on him, but this is what I love about the defense. I know everybody's talking about Simmons. I know everybody's talking about, you know, Weaver and all those other guys. But here's a guy that doesn't get the due respect that he needs is Autry. Autry is balling, man. He's 33 years old. He's still playing at a high level. And the one thing I love about him, TD, his technique is still flawless now. I mean, he is flawless. I mean, the little spin move he got has and the things that he does, he's just been a big-time disruptor. So that's the good thing about it is. But the one thing that I don't like what's going on right now is the Titans are giving up a lot of chunk plays. You got to eliminate those chunk plays. They did it against the Saints. They did it against the Los Angeles Chargers last week. I think Williams I can't remember which receiver had 84, 111 yards. You just can't keep giving up those explosive plays because you're stopping them. Then all of a sudden you get like a 40-yard catch. You just can't do that with an elite defense.
Yeah, that's something you can't give up. Against the Browns, how do you figure this is going to match up for them defensively? No Nick Chubb, how do you think things will work?
I heard through the grapevine that they're going to sign Kareem Hunt. So
no, it's done. It's done.
So it's already done. So, I mean, even though Chubb is that there, you know, I'm sorry that happened, but Kareem Hunt's not bad either. So they can't go in there and say, okay, we're just going to just stop the pass and we're just going to put pressure on Watson. You got to understand that Kareem Hunt is hungry. He wants to prove himself to get a bigger contract. So they got to stop the run and they got to make sure that they disrupt and make Deshaun Watson unhappy in the pocket.
No doubt about it. Anything else you want to get in there, or can I go ahead and get into my parting story?
I got one too, man. Go ahead.
Good. I'll let you go ahead.
You first. No, you first. You first. You go first, man.
No, go ahead. It's all you.
No, you first. No, you first.
Listen, I was seeing into you, man. Go ahead. Do your thing. Man. I'm making myself vulnerable.
Man, I was watching Sanford and Son. And I was watching this. I was like, man, you know, they Sanford and Son came in, he walked in, and then there was a guy named Grady that walked in. And my daughter was like, Dad, is that TD? I said, man, no, that's Grady.
Get out of here, man. We're out on that point.
This is Jefferson, and I'm talking with TD. For the love of money.
All right, back from the break, talking with you. You hear that bone thugs and harmony, so you know what that means. We're going to Cleveland. What we do each week, we bring in the ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the team that the Titans play. This week, it is the Browns, and my guy Jake Trotter is a very, very busy man. Jake, I appreciate you coming on.
Good to talk to you, TD.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start right from the top, man. Nick Chubb, the injury. What does that mean for this Browns offense?
I mean, it's pretty catastrophic. Nick Chubb has been, as Amari Cooper, Cleveland's wide receiver, put it, the engine of the team. Joe Bitonio called him the heart and soul. Deshaun Watson makes the most money, but Nick Chubb, in a lot of ways, is maybe the most important player on the entire Browns team. I mean, very similar to Derrick Henry, right? I mean, when you think of the Titans, you think of Derrick Henry. When you think of the Browns, you think of Nick Chubb. And he was off to such a great start this year. I mean, there were like four or five runs in Monday Night Football where it looked like he was bottled up for, you know, 1 yard loss, no gain. He gains nine. I mean, it's just, you can't replace that. So it's a devastating loss. You know, they're going to try to patch it up with Jerome Ford, who's had a nice young back, nice young prospect who went to Cincinnati. And then they just signed Kareem Hunt, you know, to be kind of his cohort. Kareem was, of course, Nick Chubb's backup for 4 years and, you know, played some good ball, but, you know, was unsigned for a reason this late into the season. So I don't know what this offense is going to look like, but my guess it's going to be a lot more difficult for the Browns to move the chains going forward than it was with Nick Chubb in the backfield.
Now, I saw a story you wrote about Deshaun Watson and how in this situation, he has to elevate his game and earn that big salary that he's getting, that big contract. Can you just share some of the highlight points from that article? And I do want the listeners, you guys, make sure you go to ESPN.com and click on the Browns page and check it out. But you're going to get the Cliff Notes right here.
Yeah, I mean, basically, without Nick Chubb, Deshaun Watson has got to be one of the 5-10 best quarterbacks in the NFL, which I suppose, like, theoretically could still happen. There's just no indication it is going to happen. Going back to when he returned in week 13 from the 11-game suspension last year, got to be honest, through training camp, kind of looked like the same. And then through two games, Zach Wilson is not the worst passing quarterback in the NFL. Kenny Pickett is not the worst. None of the rookies. Not Ryan Tannehill. The worst passing quarterback in the NFL in every statistic that you can look at is Deshaun Watson. So Now you go from a situation where you got Nick Chubb as your security blanket, your safety valve. You know, you need a play. You can go to him and he would get it for you. Now what do you do? Well, you're going to need Deshaun Watson to be 2020 version of himself. And I just don't know I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it's hard to see how that happens tomorrow or this weekend or, within the next 2-3 games. So I think anything short of that, the Browns are in real trouble based on what we've seen so far. But I mean, the NFL is a long season and we've seen crazy things happen in the NFL. I mean, you know, I remember Ryan Tannehill played wide receiver at Texas A&M, was basically discarded and it's had a very productive career for Tennessee. So, I mean, a lot can change the NFL, but we don't have a lot of examples of a guy not having it. And all of a sudden, he has it again. I mean, it doesn't seem realistic, but that's really what the Browns need to happen in order for them to be a factor. I mean, I think they can still go, 9-8, maybe 10-7 if everything breaks right. But the idea that they're going to be in the same tier with Miami, with Kansas City, with Buffalo, with Baltimore, maybe Cincinnati, if they can get it together. It's a stretch right now.
Yeah, it's crazy the way injuries change things. And speaking of injuries, right, this is a team that played on Monday. They're turning around and playing again on Sunday. Quick turnaround there. Amari Cooper, Greg Newsome, these guys had injuries in the game. Amari coming into the game. What's the latest with them?
Yeah, it sounds like, they are sitting out practice today. It sounds precautionary. They're going to try to give them some rest. I mean, listen, Tennessee is a physical team. Pittsburgh is a physical team. So it's not ideal to have a short rest between those two opponents, and they're just going to try to manage it best they can. I mean, obviously Nick Chubb was the injury everybody talked about, but they had guys on and off the field throughout. Za'Darius Smith, Myles Garrett was limping around at one point. Denzel Ward had, cramps, and he's been in concussion protocol before the season, and he was in and out of the game. I mean, they were just trying to hold on. They've already lost Jack Conklin, their right tackle. They're starting a rookie, DeJuan Jones, out of Ohio State. I don't think the tackle situation, obviously, is ideal right now on top of everything else. So, it's not any different than most teams in the NFL. You got to manage your injuries, but they are a little banged up coming out of that Monday night game in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, without a doubt. We're talking to Jake Trotter, ESPN NFL Nation Browns reporter. I want to get back to the offense real quick. And my Whiteboard Wednesday video this week, I was watching the game on Monday and I was intrigued by how they used Elijah Moore. And he's a guy, obviously, in acquisition over the offseason. Has that been the case? Like, have you seen that throughout camp? Like, them motioning him into the backfield and just using him all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, the big difference between camp and the season is they haven't been able to get him the ball during the season. I mean, he was the focal point in training camp a lot of the time in their scrimmages and their joint practices. I mean, he was a guy they definitely moved around, but a guy they could get the ball to, and they just haven't been able to. I mean, a little bit of it in camp was Amari Cooper coming off the core muscle surgery, was a little slow to return. So Elijah Moore in a lot of ways was the kind of the go-to guy. Amari is clearly the go-to guy. It was like one of the only offensive players that had a really good game Monday night. So yeah, I mean, they view, Elijah Moore as kind of their Swiss Army knife, but it really hasn't translated to big plays yet. He's got to be a guy that makes a lot of big plays for them, I think, for them to even come close to reaching their potential offensively.
So in watching the game on Monday, we saw David Njoku. He's a really good pass catcher, but they had to use him so much to help blocking against those, you know, Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt. Is that something you think they'll do this week against Arden Key, Harold Landry, and Danico Autry and the crew?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they want to get him in more involved in the passing game. And you nailed it. I mean, they had to help against TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith, even coming from the left side. It just, you know, DeJuan Jones is, he's probably at this point in his career. I mean, they drafted him as a project. I don't think anybody envisioned him starting week two this year. But he really has come along a lot faster than I think they anticipated. Had a really nice training camp. He's a little further along as a pass blocker than a run blocker. So I think the hope is that will continue. And then, you know, they might be able to get their, you know, backs involved in the passing game and obviously Njoku as well. It probably is going to be a week-to-week thing. You know, if you're, you know, they've got, for example, the 49ers in 3 weeks. You're probably going to have to keep Njoku in against those guys. But against some of the pass rushes that maybe aren't quite as formidable, you know, they'll try to turn him loose because they need guys that can make plays, and he definitely is one of those guys.
Speaking of pass rushers that are formidable, look, Myles Garrett is, as Mike Vrabel said on Wednesday, there's not too many guys walking the planet Earth that are like him, but his stats are like a lot others so far this year. It's not where it's normally, you know, as many sacks, et cetera. What is going on with him?
Well, the Browns are number one in the NFL in pass rush win rate, which is if you get to, you know, pass your block and get to the quarterback in 2.5 seconds. And the reason they're number one is because of Myles Garrett. Like, he doesn't make every play. There was an example against that Cincinnati game in the opener where he lines up over the center and he's doing like a crossover basketball move, walking into the snap. He does a Euro step, gets right by the center and he doesn't get the sack. Obo gets the sack, but Miles caused it. Miles causes a lot of sacks that he doesn't get credit for. And I mean, Miles was the most double teamed edge rusher in the NFL last year. I think most years he's been in the league, he's been right up there in that category. They've got Za'Darius Smith now, and I think it's a little bit more difficult to double Miles than it has been in the past. But he's still the guy. If you're going to double anybody, it's going to be him. I think the Browns are hoping that Za'Darius will be the beneficiary of a lot of sacks that maybe Miles causes, or Miles causes so much attention it creates a lot of one-on-one matchups. With Miles here, don't focus on the stats, even though he'll eventually pile up a bunch of sacks. You know, focus on the defense. And right now, in efficiency, at least, the Browns are number two in the NFL. It's a massive jump from what they were last year, but it definitely passes the eye test. I mean, they have been dominant through two games.
Yeah, yeah. He's someone that you do have to make sure you don't box score scout. I like the point you make there. And Za'Darius Smith on the opposite side, that's definitely an upgrade from what they've had in the past. I want to talk about the run defense, though. Third in the league, tied with the Titans, 65 yards allowed per game. What is it that's clicking so well for those guys?
Well, I don't know that they've been tested yet. You know, they were the worst run defense, or one of the two worst run defenses along with the Chargers in the NFL last year. Cincinnati was in the shotgun every play. You know how they play. And Joe Burrow was, you know, he was clearly not himself. Pittsburgh's offense is a total mess right now. I think it's going to be a big test. I think we're going to find out, because we know Tennessee is going to run right at you with Derrick Henry. It's going to be interesting to see how it does hold up. I mean, they signed Dalvin Tomlinson, you know, big run stuffer. You know, they added to their depth at defensive tackle elsewhere. But this is going to be, I think, an indication of how improved. I think it's improved. How much is it improved? I think that the Titans are going to give us a sense of how far they've come along.
Yeah, I really love the secondary, too, man. You look at those guys, you know, Ward, Delpit, Thornhill. I love Greg Newsom coming out of Northwestern. I thought the Titans should have drafted him. Of course, they selected Caleb Farley there. So that solidified. How have they been just as far as, you know, coming together and merging? I mean, this is a group that, you know, obviously Delpit had the injury and Juan Thornhill is new to the secondary. How have they come together?
Yeah, they've been excellent. they've been excellent. I mean, I think they have a chance to be a top five secondary. You know, as long as Denzel Ward is out there, he gives you that number one corner that can match up with any receiver in the NFL. MJ Emerson, third round pick out of Mississippi State a year ago, maybe the best draft pick that they have made in this regime. You know, he's been terrific and gives you some range and size, you know, that can match up against a more physical receiver, which obviously the Titans have. And, you know, Newsom's in the slot, which, you know, he wasn't thrilled about playing last year, but I think he's embraced it more and gives you good coverage ability there. And then I think the big difference is Grant Delpit. He really struggled for about a year and a half after that Achilles injury, and quietly late last year began the surge. And he has been one of their five best players so far this season. I think he's really finding his stride. So it's a terrific secondary. They're not easy to throw on because they're so good in man coverage. It allows you to bring the house against opposing quarterbacks, and they've had a lot of success doing that as well. The defense is not the problem right now for the Browns.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously Jim Schwartz there is helping things out. Before we get you out of here, Cade York, he's a guy the Titans signed. He's on the practice squad. What happened? I mean, he was so good at LSU.
Yeah, I mean, the talent is there. Mentally, he just lost it. He hit a 58-yard game winner in his debut last year at Carolina at the buzzer. And you just thought, okay, they've got, you know, their kicker for the next 15 years. And he was maybe the worst kicker in the NFL the rest of the season. You know, they were confident that he was going to be able to bounce back. And then, you know, in training camp, I think when you're, you know, having some confidence issues, you miss one and it just starts to snowball. And I think he missed three game winning kicks in the preseason, including two in one sequence in which there was a penalty, which gave him another opportunity, missed it again. And I think they were leaning toward keeping him on the 53 going into the final preseason game. And then he misses like a very makeable game winning kick. And at that point, it was just clear they had to move on. We've seen examples of kickers struggle with a team that, you know, they start with and then they go on and have awesome careers. Would not stun me at all. Cade York becomes one of those guys. And I think, you know, going to somewhere he can just kind of lay low, work on his craft, regain his confidence. If he had any mechanical or fundamental issues, work through those as well. Cause the talent there, I mean, he can kick any, you know, he has unbelievable range. And in college, we saw him make clutch field goals. So I don't know what happened with him in Cleveland, but that's not a guy I would give up on. And I think the Browns wanted to bring him back to the practice squad. I think for him, it was a positive to get a change of scenery. And I still think he's a good prospect for, and I think it was a good move for Tennessee to get him.
There you have it right there. He is Jake Trotter, ESPN NFL Nation Browns reporter. Jake, I appreciate you, and we will catch up this weekend.
All right, I'm going to have my wardrobe ready to go. I know how you get down, so I got to not embarrass myself, all right? All right, TD.
Yes, sir. We'll look great together. Thanks, man.
See you, buddy.
So that was Jake Trotter. It's always good to talk shop with my fellow ESPN NFL Nation reporters. A lot to pull out of that, man. This is going to be an interesting game, so definitely make sure you stay tuned. Appreciate Jake for coming on. Appreciate Chris Sanders or Wesley Snipes looking like fool. And you, David James, making it happen, man. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. It's always good. So definitely shout out to each of you who tune in each and every week. Appreciate that support there. If you haven't, make sure you check us out. Search on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you find your fine listening materials. We are there. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.